Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. Approximately every 2,500 years, a new teacher brings a body of teaching to humanity that is suited to our needs at that particular time. Usually this takes place at the end of an age. Right now, as the age of Pisces declines and our solar system aligns with the constellation Aquarius, new energies are beginning to make themselves felt. As these Aquarian energies of sharing and justice stream into our planet, the need for change can be seen more clearly. A period of chaos ensues as the old order lessens its grip on humanity, and the impulse of sharing, justice and peace inspires us to move forward in evolution as a united group.
Good morning, everybody, and a warm welcome to Share International's Maitreya program. Last week, we shared with you the first half of an article about Krishnamurti, and we'll continue now with Phyllis Power's words. In contrast to Krishnamurti's later stance and up to the point when he dismantled the Order of the Star, he seemed to accept wholeheartedly the Master's existence and his relationship with them. This is shown strongly in a small book he wrote when he was only 14 years old. And it was entitled At the Feet of the Master and subtitled To Those Who Knock. The book is about the relationship of a pupil disciple to his master. And it was said to be dictated to Krishnamurti by his master, Kut Humi. The author is named as Alcyon, which was the name given to Krishnamurti by Annie Besant when she adopted him. In her preface to the book, Annie Besant says, "May it help others as the spoken teachings helped him." In the foreword, Krishnamurti writes, "These are not my words, they are the words of the master who taught me." However, we can also see in the book some of the seeds of Krishnamurti's later teachings. Much of it sounds very esoteric.
The book, At the Feet of the Master, is very different from other books by Krishnamurti. And although it is still available and has been through many editions, it is not usually included as part of his set of books. The book presents the teaching and precepts of the master, and much of it is written in the second person, as though the master is addressing his pupil. It also speaks of the master as a true devotee would. The pupil is one with the master, and he needs only to put back his thought into the master's thought to see at once whether it agrees. If it does not, it is wrong, and he changes it instantly. The book emphasizes that he who knocks, that is, who wishes to take the path of discipleship, must faithfully follow the guidance contained there in order to fulfill the four necessary qualifications. Although it seems to come from a completely different tradition from that which Krishnamurti later formulated for his readers. However, many of the precepts for a disciple are universal and in line too with the Ageless Wisdom teaching, such as the need for serious commitment to the path. In his talks with different audiences, Krishnamurti often talked about the need to be serious in inquiring about and living one's life. This was not against humour, but against superficiality.
At the Feet of the Master is divided into four sections, each dealing with one qualification for taking the path: discrimination, desirelessness, good conduct, and love. Discrimination. For those who know, that is, those who understand God's plan as evolution, discrimination is essential. At this early point in Krishnamurti's life, it is already stressed that if someone is on God's side, it does not matter what religion he or she belongs, because all are one. However, Discrimination is essential in choosing between the real, God's plan of evolution, and the unreal, the ways of the material world, which are fundamentally illusory. The distinction is made between you as God immanent and the you as your vehicles, physical, astral, mental. Distinguishing between the real and unreal also underlay Krishnamurti's later teaching, although after this time he did not speak to his audiences of God, nor of the teachings he had from the Theosophists as a boy. In the same vein, this section ends, "Learn to distinguish that God in everyone and everything, no matter how evil he or it may appear on the surface. You can help your brother through that which you have in common with him, and that is the life. We are all part of the one life."
So the next section in the book was titled Desirelessness. And this section shows how most people are enthralled to and identify with their desires. They feel they are their desires. And again, the only way to be free of all desire, whether physical, emotional, or the apparently higher desires, such as a wish for recognition for help given, is to give yourself to the service of the world because you love it and cannot help giving yourself to it. The next section, Good Conduct, is more wide-ranging, with passages on self-control in action and in the mind, tolerance, cheerfulness, one-pointedness, confidence. Self-control entails cultivating a calm mind, unmoved by the emotions, in order to face, without fear, the trials and difficulties of the path. The pupil is urged to remember that nothing that comes at a person from the outside should affect his steadiness of purpose. He must always think of others and not succumb to depression. The path's not easy. Tolerance. The pupil is urged to not impose your beliefs on others. Cheerfulness, to bear your karma cheerfully even when in adversity, and to give up love of possession.
One-pointedness, all unselfish work is the master's work, and you must give all your attention to it. Nothing shall turn you from the path you have entered. Confidence, trust your master and yourself. You are a spark of God's fire, which must be tempered steel if you would tread the path. Love. This is the most important of the qualifications. Love is the will to be one with God because of your deep love for him. The pupil must be careful not to harm and careful to help as is needed. Gossip, cruelty, and superstition are sins against love. The treatise ends, "Wisdom, will, and love are the three aspects of the Logos. And you who wish to enroll yourselves to serve him must show forth these aspects in the world." This is clearly a statement of the ageless wisdom teaching.
In 1922, while Krishnamurti was still leading the Order of the Star, as reported by Mary Lutyens, his biographer, a most powerful event occurred. He seemed to be taken over by a different consciousness. He seemed transformed and spoke in a different way. Those around him were aware of a powerful energy in the room and the transformation in Krishnamurti, and they took it that Maitreya was speaking through him. Krishnamurti himself described the experience as one of supreme joy and of a sensed oneness with all lives, but it was also accompanied by great physical pain. He named this as the process, and it recurred throughout his life. In her extensive and detailed biography, Mary Lutyens, who knew Krishnamurti for most of her life, was inclined to believe that the teacher, the Lord Maitreya, had indeed entered the body of Krishnamurti. Krishnamurti wrote to Ledbetter, "I feel again in touch with Lord Maitreya and the Master, and there is nothing else for me to do but to serve them. The horizon of my life is clear and the skyline is beautiful and precise."
A similar event occurred in 1925 at a meeting of the Order of the Star. Krishnamurti suddenly started talking in the first person. "I come to reform and not to tear down. I come not to destroy but to build." He wrote, "I am sure he will come again very soon." Benjamin Krem said that Krishnamurti was frequently overshadowed by Maitreya and knew it all his life. In 1927, Krishnamurti said, To me, it is all. It is Sri Krishna. It is the Master KH. It is the Lord Maitreya. It is the Buddha. And yet it is beyond all these forms. I am one with my beloved. You will not be able to understand the beloved until you are able to see him in every animal, every blade of grass, in every person that is suffering, in every individual. Those experiences happened before Krishnamurti dissolved the Order of the Star, when he declared his future and lifelong role to be as a teacher, not a guru, to set man unconditionally free of all authority. From then onwards, he did not talk explicitly about the Masters or Maitreya, but the process continued, and to those close to him, he frequently talked of a powerful energy around and in him, which they likewise experienced.
Krishnamurti died in 1986, aged 90. In 1977, Benjamin Krem announced that Maitreya had come into the modern world himself, not by overshadowing a disciple, but using a Maya Varupa, which is a self-created body, at a time when Krishnamurti was still teaching around the world. Had Krishnamurti let it be known that Maitreya was in the world, with a possibility of declaring himself quite soon, might he also then have talked openly about the Masters? This is, of course, a hypothetical question. However, in my imagination, I carry an alternative scenario. I imagine that Krishnamurti knows about Maitreya's presence in the world from his own contacts. He goes back to his earliest writing and his early encounters with the Masters and realizes that, after so long, the time has come for him to talk openly about what he has experienced so definitively and vividly. Now, at this time in history, the world needs to know about the Masters. So, Krishnamurti talks about Maitreya, the world teacher, who has so often overshadowed him throughout his life. I imagine the impact this will have on many of Krishnamurti's pupils. Some will be shocked and appalled and will surely dismiss his apparent about-turn. But he could still emphasize that devotion to a master can be inimical to a person's development. For others, this announcement might be joyfully liberating. At last they see how different aspects of Krishnamurti's life fit together and how the early promise of his life has worked out. It adds a new hope and purpose to the livingness that Krishnamurti's teaching gives them.
Krishnamurti said that individuals have to change themselves to change society. For our time, Maitreya teaches that because the private and the social and political domains are inextricably and spiritually bound together, our task now goes beyond that, to work as a group, as the whole of humanity, to transform all of our world, both inner and outer. Krishnamurti was indeed a wonderful teacher who moved many thousands towards a greater freedom and joy in their inner life. Maybe by the time Maitreya came into the modern world, it would have been too late for Krishnamurti to change course so drastically in his life's teaching. His way was always his own, and his message from the day he dissolved the Order of the Star was always the same, the divinity of all humanity. And now a quote from the On Dissolving the Order of the Star in 1929. I am concerning myself with only one essential thing, to set man free. Look within yourselves for the enlightenment, for the glory, for the purification, and for the incorruptibility of the self.
So now, to have a change of pace or tack, we would like to read to you an article from the Save Our Planet section of the magazine titled More Carbon Dioxide Now Than in the Last 3 Million Years. A study just published, April 2019, by researchers at Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research and the Max Planck Institute for Meteorology in Hamburg, Germany, states there is now more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than at any other time in the last 3 million years. Researchers have succeeded for the first time in creating a computer simulation of the climate of the past 3 million years that matched data taken from sediment from the ocean floor. We know from the analysis of sediments on the bottom of our seas about past ocean temperatures and ice volumes. But so far, the role of carbon dioxide changes in shaping the glacial cycles has not been fully understood. And that was from the lead study author, Matteo Willeit, of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, in a press release. It is a breakthrough that we can now show in computer simulations that changes in CO2 levels were a main driver of the ice ages.
Their findings have frightening implications. During the period modelled in the computer simulation, global temperatures never rose above pre-industrial levels by more than 2 degrees Celsius. If humans continue to burn fossil fuels at current rates, we will surpass the marker within 50 years with major consequences. Our results imply a strong sensitivity of the Earth system to relatively small variations in atmospheric CO2, Willeit said. As fascinating as this is, it is also worrying. Willeit told CNN that the models showed that carbon dioxide levels would not be more than 280 parts per million, ppm, today if human activity had not intervened in natural climate cycles. Instead, they are at around 410 ppm. If this trend is not slowed, Willeit told CNN, our planet will change. The next 200 years could see 1 to 2 metres, which is approximately 3.3 to 6.6 feet of sea level rise. And that's from EchoWatch.com and CNN.com.
And it looks like we have time to read out a few quotes on the theme of caring for the planet. And these quotes are taken from various sources, messages from Maitreya, Maitreya's teachings, from Benjamin Creme's master and Mr. Creme's writings. And this is the first of the selection that we are reading out. It's from the article Awakening to Responsibility. There is a growing awareness that careful and concerted action on a global scale alone can remedy the many transgressions of the natural order which man's ignorance and greed has brought about. A start is being made, but many years of dedicated action will be required even to halt the menace of pollution and depredation which threatens man now. Fortunately, not all in the future sound so dark a note. Man, as ever, is not alone, and steps have been taken to release to him the knowledge of new and cleaner and safer modes of generating power. Technologies altogether new will transform daily living and leave man time and impulse to explore his own being and purpose.
And now another one. My master has said that after the redistribution of resources, the number one priority is to tackle the ecological problems of the world. Maitreya has said this is something that engages everyone. No one is too young or too old, he says, to take part in this. Whether it is wasting a little piece of paper or burning an entire forest to make way for grazing cattle for beef, we have to change. Many millions there are in the world who know the need of man, who see that vision, but know not the urgency of the time. I rely on all those with the knowledge of your brother's needs, a sympathy for the sufferings of so many, and a will to change all that. May you be among those upon whom I may call, that together we can usher in a new and better world. And that is from Maitreya, from message number 46.
And the next quote is from, again, from Benjamin Creme's master, from an article called The Earth in Travail. Man has ravaged and polluted the earth and severely damaged his own environment. Now man must see it as a top priority to remedy what he has hurt and so restore to health his ailing planet. He must learn to simplify his demands on the planet and learn the beauty of simplicity and the joy of sharing. Man has but little choice. The urgency of the task demands immediate action. Few indeed realize the true scale of damage already done. The question may be asked, can planet Earth be saved, and by what means? The answer is a resounding yes, and by means which involve the transformation of the present modes of living by the majority of men.
Well, and thank you very much, everybody, for listening to us. I do hope you've enjoyed it and learned lots of different things about the world around us. And you can learn more, if you wish, by going to www.share-international.org, or you may write to us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Thank you once again, and love and blessings to you all.